So when the Buddha taught these four satipatthana establishments of mindfulness, where mindfulness should be placed. So those used to be translated as foundations, but then it was recognized the translation was slightly incorrect. Mindfulness is actually founded, properly rooted upon right view and right intention. Right view and right virtue. In fact, in one discourse he says, when you have right view, the understanding of cause and effect, the understanding that there are skillful consequences to skillful deeds and unskillful consequences to unskillful deeds, when you really have that, then you establish your integrity, and then you can establish mindfulness in three ways: externally, internally, and both together. So clearly mindfulness then is established on a particular foundation of proper perspective and proper intentionality. Intention is based upon virtue, harmlessness, honesty, non-delusion. So this very much, you know, knits mindfulness into sila, morality, but also just the way that we live. We're living in a way where we can acknowledge in a day whether we acted skillfully or unskillfully, lost our temper, got dismissive, held negative views about people. All these qualities of body, speech or mind that were actually not really beautiful. That's the proper foundation. Very much based on intentionality. Where does intention come from? Well, intention is a natural heart energy, or chitta energy. It's the do it, right? To do it, whether you're doing it physically or verbally, even with your thought, something, you respond or you react to what happens. Even if what happens is just a thought, you get it, I'll do this, you respond. Being affected and responsive, that's the domain of chitta. Now, of course, your thinking mind can carefully, work out a strategy, but the responsive quality, being affected and responsive, that's chitta, that's heart. It's an involuntary thing. We feel hurt, we feel upset, we feel pleased, we feel grateful, we get that effect and then responses happen. So I say then, you're basing it upon that particular understanding that those responses that one makes have consequences, both for your own well-being. If you've got upset, you feel agitated, you feel bitter, you feel distressed, and that's not good. Also, it affects others. And clearly, if one acts with patience, with modesty, with restraint, you feel less shaken, more steady, more complete, you feel better, other people feel better. So this is a fundamental understanding of right view. Moreover, that in accordance with how one is in touch with responses and how we moderate them, sets up particular patterns. So if we keep going through the same response of getting irritable or getting impatient, we establish a personal pattern and a behavior pattern where that becomes the norm. So it becomes a kind of habit. And some of these habits are, they're not necessarily evil, but they're unwholesome, not helpful. For example, we might feel paranoid. So we hear something, feel frightened and feel threatened, and we respond in a frightened, threatened way. And we send out these defensive, go away, leave me alone messages. We didn't really get wasn't very clear about what was happening in the first place. So we got a reaction that's become habitual. Because I feel anxious, I feel nervous, I feel anxious, then I interpret things as threatening that maybe aren't threat, where threat isn't intended. So my responses then come up from this threatened position where I feel people are hostile or bullying me, and they're not aware of this. So one can get these behavior patterns established that become, so the citta runs on these lines. It keeps acting this particular way. Some people get aggressive behaviors. They get controlling, very controlling, or they get feeling helpless and impotent. And so these are all, they're not evil, but they're afflicted. So, you know, we're trying to actually recognize, well, these aren't necessarily things we feel we have much control over. But with mindfulness, there is a possibility to clear these. So you set up, at least with a clear intention, is towards the harmless, the beautiful, the uplifting, the bright, the non-afflictive, the non-defensive, the non-aggressive, the fearless. Let me try in that way, recognizing that these unwholesome or unproductive attitudes that remain. And these then, one establishes mindfulness in order to act as that which will bring clarity where there's been confusion, that which will bring awareness where there's been just a blur of reactivity, that which will enable me to see more clearly how things are happening and where the errors and the mistakes are. Of all unwholesome results, you get the three: greed, hatred, and delusion. The Buddha said delusion is the most difficult to comprehend. Greed, we know we're greedy. Hatred, yeah, that's obvious. Delusion, you don't see it because nature is deluding. It's only mindfulness that can help one to penetrate delusion. This is why we establish it. So this is not just about doing some meditation technique. This is about our own welfare and, of course, the welfare of others. This is about clearing our karmic habits, our feelings of guilt or inadequacy. Clearing these habits so they don't continue to perpetuate themselves and use our life energy in actions and responses that are not fulfilling. They're actually crippling. And it's quite obvious that human beings have the capacity to put a lot of energy into sabotaged programs. They sabotage their own well-being with acts of delusion. You know, you think, who would want to do that? You don't want to do it, just delusion. It means we get stuck in fearfulness, aggressiveness, jealousies, things that do us no good at all. And then we think, oh, I'm just this way, this is the way I am, I'm a mess, I can't help it. You can help it. So it's exactly for clearing this the Buddha established this practice. And of course it's not easy, because delusion is bewildering. So when you see the Satipatthana, you see these four aspects: body, feeling, citta, and dhammas. And you could take them 1, 2, 3, 4, but actually it's like four legs of a table, four legs of a chair. You've got to get them all properly on the ground. Or maybe you get one down first, but you really want all four to be properly established. So it's not just today I'll do body and then tomorrow I'll do this. No, you may have to start with body. That seems to be the general theme. You start with body and then you get the other three down, so you're fully established. And why is this? Because essentially you have two areas of reactivity, one is bodily. Body jumps and reacts, and citta jumps and reacts. And also the body has karma, we can act with our body, and we can act with our citta. And so these two, the citta and the body, are pretty much intertwined. And where they intertwine, because both of them feel, they experience a sense of pleasure, pain, and strong responses to those signals. So they come together around pleasure and pain. We feel physical pleasure and physical pain, and then our citta gets excited one way or another. So feeling knits the body and the mind. Dhammas are that which proceed from the citta and will tend to activate our bodily activity. So if you like, feelings are what happens to us, dhammas are what the results are. We experience something, we're impacted, we feel something, and then there's a response, which is dhammas arise. Could be the dhamma of ill will, could be the dhamma of loving kindness. Yeah, these come straight from the heart. Yeah, could be the dhamma of fear, or could be the dhamma of confidence. Could be the dhamma of generosity, or it could be the dhamma of clinging and holding on. And these will tend to be how we then act. So this is how these four come together, internally and externally. You can see the body is affected by things that happen from outside it: cold weather, warm weather, rain, physical impact, pleasant touches, unpleasant touches. Internally, we feel sick, we feel jet lagged, we feel tired. This is nothing to do with what's happening around me. This is internal bodily experience. We feel tense, we feel, you know, frightened. So this internal body very much mirrors and is a guide to what's happening in the citta. The internal body replicates citta effects. And obviously, you know, if the body is very tense, it's impossible for the citta to feel comfortable and confident and free. If the body is tense and tight, the citta will be stressed and tense and nervous. These two go together. So this internal body and the qualities of citta are pretty much mirror images of themselves. So then we get feeling based upon what happens from outside and feeling what happens inside. We get citta effects that are dependent upon what happens from externally, affected by, you know, what seems to be around us, also with our memories and mental procedures and mental habits of the past. Internal citta effects. I feel gloomy. Yeah, I feel, you know, so it's an internal effect. It's happening within the citta rather than something's being laid upon it from external sources. And so the two work together in that the ideal is to establish an external environment which is at least protected, safe, comfortable. So that you can actually deal with these internal qualities. The internal qualities are the ones that most obviously relate to liberation or non-liberation. External qualities will tend to change as you move around, go around doing things. But you don't want to have external qualities such as what we can touch or what seems to be happening around us. Our environment can be very distracting. So often with your basis of your procedures towards the external is sense of restraint. Doesn't mean we shut it off, we're not oblivious, but we have a sense of stepping back from and seeing where what feels suitable, called wise attention or deep attention. Yeah. So particularly when you want to do some more in-depth internal practice, then you sit somewhere quiet. Of course, you can't always do that. But remember, these four establishments are not for meditation rooms alone. The Buddha didn't live in a meditation room. He got enlightened without a zafu or a bell or air conditioning or anything, just basically sitting in the root of a tree. So clearly there were insects, creatures around, daylight, temperature and so forth. But the body can also detect what it feels around it. So the eye can see a long way, the body can sense right around me at this particular time, even if it's 5 centimeters around me, that's okay. So any of you moving around in the street, you keep that sense of moving within your bubble. You know, sights and sounds, she's doing this, he's doing that, that's in the shop window, there's a car, I'm aware of it, but mostly I'm staying within this bubble, my own bodily sense. You can sense it extends slightly beyond the skin boundary of the body. You maintain that. And you can also, when you maintain that, you can see the things that pull you out. So you can be in your personal zone, which is roughly, you know, an arm's length distance around you. And you can see something in a sight pulls you out, a sound. And it will carry out what's called a sign or a signal, nimitta. And the sign will be something to do with either it's exciting, it's attractive, or it's urgent. It's got a sense of fear or urgency to it. Or, you know. So the citta doesn't actually see anything, but it gets that sign, that sense of, oh, attraction, or oh, aversion, or oh, fearfulness. It gets that little sign, that like almost like a signal. Bleep. And the citta, what's going on? Yeah. So in all the sights and sounds that are around us, it's the signs that affect the citta. This is comfortable, this is hostile, it's very busy around here, it seems somewhat threatening, you pick up the sign. The citta picks up the sign. Threatening, not safe. What happens? The citta then contracts. Gets slightly withheld, retracts. Shaky, or it gets excited, it wants to reach out. Now if you establish that bodily sense, you can feel it almost pushing against your skin, something, you know, or trying to hide or trying to come out. So, you know, then this heart, this citta, is very much embodied, because that sign, that signal goes into the inner body. And the inner body and the citta shake or tremble. They could be with humour, it could be with joy, it could be with fear or irritation or something. It trembles. Oh, there's that. And you contemplate, there's that. You see the shape, your citta changes its shape. Sometimes you're in a lot of space, you can be quite wide and open. Crowded situation, you can feel closed. And based upon that, the sign that a sign has stimulated to do that. Right? And the citta then takes on a certain characteristic or shape. As it does so, this edits the kind of dhammas that will proceed. If the citta is tight and contracted, it's very difficult to experience generosity, ease and comfort. If it's expansive and steady, it's very difficult to experience cynicism or bitterness. It just doesn't go. So in this way, we're beginning just by this process to sense, if the citta can be held steadily, then such qualities as feeling threatened and feeling cynical and feeling depressed, they might not arise. And those habits that I've established in order to want to act upon these signals, these qualities of anxiety or depression, those habits, that structure, those thoughts, they might not arise. And if they don't arise, I'm transformed. I change, I'm changed, because my citta has changed its track. And the Buddha himself said, the Tathagata, he said certain qualities had just been cut off completely at the root. He says it's like a palm tree. If you see a palm, it's got an outer bark or texture, and inside it's hollow. Yeah. So just like you cut that off, there's nothing there. Said, for me, there's no hatred. It can't happen. That pathway is gone. That track is gone. There's no fear. That's gone. My citta doesn't do that anymore. It's moved out of that shape. There's no craving. That one's gone. You know, because the citta has been properly held, steadied, seen with clarity, therefore phenomena that arise from a lack of clarity don't arise. And phenomena that arise from a lack of clarity or ignorance, you know, give rise to unwholesome habits, psychological habits, emotional habits, verbal habits, behavioural habits, physical habits. And all these can be so built in, they become myself, my life. And what if all that weight of my life, myself, my habits could be cleared? This is what we call release. So this holding of the heart is a very careful and powerful and transformative practice. Having said that, it's not a practice whereby I do very much. Mindfulness does it. Right view does it. Dhamma practice does it. Because the I am is a quality that's already infected with certain behaviours. It's not impartial. It's not impartial, and it's biased, and it's got its blind spots. So they say the Dhamma deals with me better than I do. You know, as we can see, people who don't have a Dhamma practice are actually less supported than people who do. If we don't have a Dhamma practice, myself, I will actually continue to perpetuate my psychological habits. I will continue to perpetuate my sense of what I am. And I will continue to perpetuate my feelings of what I think I'm not, and what I should be, and could be, and why I'm like this, and whose fault it is. And that will continue to... That's the I am, is that. It's partial. It's conditioned. And we place our trust in the Dhamma, this instead of this. So review the citta from the place of Dhamma rather than the place of self. Okay, now, again, this doesn't mean a whole lot of beliefs or ideology, saying just be mindful. Based upon right view and virtue, establish mindfulness. And this mindfulness will be supported, and the citta will be supported by body. So we see these four, and I've used the simile of four legs of a table. But I also like to bring up to mind a sense of all, they all fit inside mindfulness of body. So that acts as the kind of container. Yeah. So with mindfulness of body, the sense details are kind of held at arm's length. We're not getting fresh input coming in from the sensory world. So the mindfulness body acts like a kind of a shield and a container. Yeah. It means fresh sensory impact is restricted. The presence of the inner body has a profound effect on the citta. The body acts as a kind of a shield or a screen, a filter. It means we're not getting fresh sensory input because we can feel this is my body, this is my feet, this is my back. I'm walking along, my shoulders are here, my hands are here. This is my business. The world shifts around me like a ship moving through water. So that gives a sense of security. You're in your zone. And the internal body and the citta are very much bound together. So this means when we're sensing our body in itself, you also sense the sense of tension or fluidity, stress, agitation, and you sense breathing. And breathing here is just this flow of breathing, inhalation, pause, exhalation, pause. And it's a very steady flow. And if the other sense impact is restricted, you get more aware of that flow. And it's actually, it's that which mediates the emotional quality. When the breathing is steady and smooth, the citta is steadied. You don't have to do anything, it just does it. The energy of the breathing body has a very comforting and establishing effect on the citta. Now, once again, you know, I kind of sometimes rather cautious about talking about breathing because I've noticed by and large people try to focus on their breathing, try to get mindful of breathing. And this trying removes the emotional comfort, which is what breathing's about. It's supposed to be just a comfortable, relaxed thing that happens by itself. You don't have to try to breathe. You know. So and then you find a focus which enables you to feel that. Oh yeah, like breathing is rather nice. Yeah. The effect of that means that when the citta starts jumping and it feels this sense of breathing, it calms down. When the citta starts contracting and it feels a sense of steady breathing, it begins to release. When it wants to run away and hide, it feels the breathing and it says, okay, you're okay here. When it wants to rush out, get something, breath is just say, hey, don't lose this. And you could even suggest to you that when we get into our responses and reactions, wherever they are, can you hold awareness of the response or the reaction that you're experiencing for the duration of a complete exhalation, the pause, and the inhalation, and the pause. That is, breathing out. It's a pause. Breathing in. And maybe two, maybe three. This will certainly mean that your reactions, your citta's reactions, will not be able to be sustained. Yeah. When you react, the citta has to move away from that steady breath pattern. It jumps. So, naturally you want to respond. But feeling affected by something, take that, let that breath go all the way out, pause. Because it does pause. Okay, now, if you do three of those, the degree of reactivity will drop enormously. Your reactivity, which is compulsive, is substantially reduced just by staying with that same reaction and breathing, it begins to change. You feel, first of all, you hit something, I've got to hurry up. Okay, just give yourself three breaths. Okay, now, yeah, that seems important. let's see what I can do about that. It changes into a response. And then the dhammas that proceed from response will be associated with clarity, with integrity, with right focus, and with goodwill. Reaction means you don't really know what's going on in that. You know, the reaction just says, do it. And the qualities of whether one's heart is stained with ill will or fear, or they're not clear. The reaction is so fast, we don't clearly know what is coming down that reaction through that reactivity. Yeah. So this alone, learning to respond rather than react. Naturally, the first thing that happens for all of us will be some kind of reaction. It's like when something pings, knocks the chitta, its first thing is, oh, what's that? Pleasure, pain. There's going to be some kind of movement towards or against. That's okay. You just notice that, okay, then a reaction. I don't like, just breathe in. Okay, so you don't like it, so... Don't have to have it. Because when you stay within that process of the embodied citta, unpleasant feeling that normally one would kind of fight against or react to dissolves. It doesn't penetrate. As it said, the citta properly trained is like a roof that's properly thatched, properly covered. The rain doesn't penetrate it. A citta that's not trained is like a roof with holes in it. Pleasure, pain just comes straight through. Now, we can't stop it raining. There will be pleasure, there will be pain. There will be exciting things, there will be terrifying things. You know? The aim is to protect one's citta with embodied mindfulness. Then there will be painful feeling. But instead of that, there'll be that, okay, let's just... And the volition, the impulse, the velocity of the feeling dissolves. Feeling is just velocity, you know, something, impulse rushing down into one's nervous system. If that velocity can be met by an embodied heart, it goes down. It steadies, it calms, it soothes. And this particularly when the feeling comes not from physical impact, but from psychological impact. I feel blamed, I feel threatened, I feel wrongly accused, I feel misjudged. And once we get these things occurring, the thinking mind can go, well, it's wrong, it's not fair, I tried to do this, they don't listen. Yeah, that's true, but it doesn't actually stop you suffering. If one is blamed, accused, so forth, rather than just going into why they did this and who they are and how dare they, there's unpleasant feeling. Breathing in, you pick up the signal, the sign, which is threat. Okay. What do you do with threat? Chitta wants to contract or react, hold it steady, take a few breaths with that, and that impact dissolves. And you feel confident, and you feel steady. And you can meet the threat with, I don't see it that way. I don't accept that. That's not defensive, it's just honest. I don't accept what you're saying. I would like to know why you're saying it and what's happening for you. The sympathy, you know, you feel I've... Okay, I'd like to hear that, but I personally don't accept that. please, let's talk about it. End of reaction, beginning of a response that is fundamentally healthy and fulfilling for myself and for others. And you begin to track some of these signals and signs, threat sign, the desire sign, the pressure weighing down. You've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, it's more of this, it's more of that, it's more of this, and another thing. You feel the pressure, and then the chitta is getting more and more compressed. You feel compressed, go down into your feet. Feel the earth. Breathe in, breathe out. Hold it without doing anything other than properly feeling your body internally. And the chitta comes out of that. So, when the Buddha presented these are not meditational experience. This is office. This is traffic. This is street. This is kitchen. This is kitchen practice. This is office practice. This is driving your car practice. And why shouldn't it be? Why shouldn't it be? When the Buddha established these four foundations, it says walking, standing, sitting, reclining, scratching, leaning, eating, chewing, masticating, defecating, wherever. He really meant like wherever. Wherever. Because suffering doesn't say, I'll wait till you get to the meditation hall, then we'll have some suffering. It hits you wherever and whenever. So you've got to be ready wherever and whenever. And this is why we use these to cover our life. So I'll offer that for your reflection today. Thank you, everyone.